I'm sorry. Why do you think that? I'm okay. Let me back up. I'm doing a loan. I'm closing on a mortgage in a room not unlike this one, and somehow the podcast comes up, and I agreed to send an episode or two to my client, and following that, he asked me, "What are you trying to accomplish with this podcast?" Essentially. And, you know, I described it in the way I told you, like, I'm, you know, looking for, people making a difference, et cetera, in the community. And then he immediately gave me your name. Like, why did he give me your name?
Yeah. Well,
not to speak for someone else.
To be completely honest, it's a truly humbling experience, the fact that he gave you my name. You know, my goal is just to be a servant to whoever I can. And I was fortunate enough that I got connected with Gateway Science Academy. And it was truly accidental the way that it happened. And it's been a great way to help not just the kids there, but kids in the city. Through sports and through the youth ministry that I do. And so I think, you know, you know the heart of people by the fruit of what comes out. And I think that probably Coach Sally saw a lot of young men doing better than when they started. And that's kind of the premise of our program, is to stay hungry, stay humble, and grow.
Yeah.
So it's not about winning or losing. It's about getting better every day.
Yeah. And you know, I kind of alluded to as a referee, you know, sometimes it's weird what you pay attention to, but I was doing this game. I feel like I was at, I want to say Cardinal Ritter. I think I was doing the game at Cardinal Ritter perhaps. And, you know, I was impressed with both teams, both groups of young men. You know, in the middle of the city of St. Louis, you're not sure what you're going to get in terms of atmosphere. And I walked away with a really good feeling. So there's clearly important people doing important things.
Yeah, I've always said, right, and hopefully my actions speak for that. But, you know, it's easy to judge culture. And, you know, I grew up in St. Charles. When I moved back here to St. Louis, you know, all of our parents, everyone's wondering, you know, we moved to Maplewood and they were concerned of how close we were to the city,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when we decided to start coming to church here and we decided to go to, we moved here just right down the street, you know, ultimately you can't change culture unless you're part of it. So being here in the moment and being here and seeing that this generation of kids, they're not, you know, that they're not what people think they are. They're a lot smarter. They're a lot more, you know, the empathy is there, the care. It may just, you got to talk to them in a different way, and it may not work just the way it worked for me, but that doesn't mean that they can't be changed and that they want to get better.
Well, thanks for taking the time with us today, Bobby. This is, we're here today with Bobby Broadhurst. He is, we'll get into it and you'll get to know Bobby just as we will, since Pete and I have not met Bobby before. But Bobby, there's many, many descriptions out there, but just a detail-oriented, military-trained leader, demonstrated expertise in leading large teams to achieve goals, experience leading and executing qualitative and quantitative research, critically assessing the findings, and then insight into innovative solutions for those. Also a proven leader in maritime warfare and the construction industry as well. United States Naval Academy, class of 2013, ocean engineer, and also an MBA at St. Louis University, wrestling coach, just a deacon, well immersed in helping the youth of today's world. Thanks for joining us and taking the time out of your busy schedule. We appreciate it, Bobby.
No, it's my pleasure.
Yeah, I don't know how with that list of obligations and accolades, I'm not sure how he's fitting us in. But, you know, it's when Chris says we're here today, not only is this the first time we've recorded a podcast with a person we haven't met, but it's also the first time we've recorded a podcast in the basement of a church. So it's two for two new experiences today.
Yeah. It's always open if you guys need it.
So we are at Tower Grove Christian Church. Is that right?
Yeah. And Tower Grove Church.
What do you do here?
So here at Tower Grove Church, I am the youth minister. I'm also the chairman of our deacons. I'm also on the school board here at Tower Grove Christian Academy. And I teach a chapel class. I just got done at like 11. So every Tuesday.
Very nice.
I think, and this is just one of your many ventures, but I love what you started off on when you and Pete were talking about the kids and, you know, when you put the attention into children, all of a sudden you can see such potential. And I think that has a lot to do with, I don't know, your upbringing, but you being drawn to being a coach, that's typically how coaches think too. Immediately when you see a kid, you see their potential. And can you speak to that a little bit with the kids that you are involved with just in the youth ministry, but also touch on what age do you coach wrestling?
High school, and then I'm the head club coach I'm the director for a club team for elementary all the way up, but...
Yeah, so yeah. Just going to that for a minute, when you see a kid who may, I mean, we see it all the time. Kids can be overlooked. Some kids work better with not so much attention. Some kids work better when they need attention. Speak to that, because you see kids in all different capacities with probably all different types of backgrounds. What do you see when you see kids like that? And, do you see that? Do you see their potential right away? Just in seeing their reactions and answers to questions and things?
Yeah. You know, what drew me, you know, when you're asked to lead like youth ministry, it's not easy because, though I love teenagers, they're still teenagers.
Right.
Right. I mean, they're still being who they are. But you know, what really drew me is, and this is kind of this is the Bible verse that leads our youth ministry is Psalm 127:4. And it says like arrows in the hands of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. And, one of the things that really it, like highlights that with me is, I mean, if you look at an arrow, right? I mean, an arrow is just a stick, right? Just like a kid is just who they are. And sadly, we don't get to spend forever with any of these kids. Especially like you look at a high school, right? Say a kid comes in freshman year, if I'm lucky enough, my wrestling team, 4 years, he's out that door. I may never see him again. So I need to equip him or her for the world. Same thing happens in our youth ministry. So I need to put the feathers on the end of it. I need to sharpen that, the head, and put it on there so that when we let them out, right, and we let them go, it's not, we're just throwing them out in the world. We're sending them out for a purpose. And they're out there to hit a target and hopefully continue to grow and to get everyone better. So some kids come in with broken feathers. Some kids come in with, they need to be hardened up a little bit. But I think the individualism is what people want to look past. You want to put everyone in, you know, a lot of people want to put kids into a standard system and let them, you know, do the same thing. But if you don't know what each kid needs, then, that's one of the, you know, kind of fundamental principles I learned growing up and in my leadership experience.
That really hits home. I mean, just the idea of, identifying and accepting someone's individualism and sort of embracing it, I guess, because we're not all, it's not a, humans are not a cookie cutter, creation, right? Yeah. We may have one God, or we may have multiple gods depending on people's backgrounds, but as far as what we're striving for, you know, there's some excellence in what it means to be a human, but not necessarily going to be the same path for everyone, right? Yeah. And it's just kind of an interesting theme, because we we had a podcast not, kind of recently with president of a city school.
St. Mary's.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I did listen to that one.
And, I mean, not, there's some commonality there, I think, with what you just said. All kids, it's not even all kids aren't equal. Every person's got maybe a different talent, different background, of course. But it's important for you as a mentor, I dare say a role model, and then, of course, a coach and a teacher to be able to nourish that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, that's what it's about. It's about growth, right? I mean, wrestling season just ended. If you guys don't know, it's during basketball season, so it's a real sport that's going on while they're playing basketball.
My brother
Trust me, can relate. I know. Yeah. I got cut from basketball, so I wrestled.
There you go. There you go. And best decision you ever made.
It was, actually. It was an unbelievable decision.
I do have to make the shout-out. Gateway Science Academy wrestling team, like 7 kids on the basketball team, 30 kids on the wrestling team. So that's without our girls team that's starting next year. So
who knows why that's the case?
Who knows? But, and that's what's great about the sport of wrestling is that there's so many ways to get to the same goal. But, we just had the season end and we've got a bunch of kids that hang in their heads because maybe they wrestled for 4 years and they never made it to state or they didn't accomplish what they wanted. But, ultimately it's, are you better today than the first day you walked in here?
In wrestling practice, you're better the next day after the first day you walk in
there. Absolutely. And so it's like none of it's wasted. Oh. And as a coach, none of that's wasted on me. It's not about this year's success.
Right.
It's about 20 years from now when they go, man, this is really tough. I'm in a job that's really hard. I'm in this, but it's not as bad as like when Coach Bobby had me running sprints that one day.
Well, the trash bags on.
No, that's illegal. We don't do that anymore.
Of course, yeah. I'm like, no, don't worry. It's audio only. So nobody can.
There we go.
But what also like on that note, you as a coach, but also as someone who guides youth, which is usually the same similar things. But you just knowing your background, you have a competitive mindset too. So, how do you, cause I think coaching, it evolves throughout the years. If you're a coach, you do one way when you're younger and then maybe you all of a sudden you switch to a different route when you get older and it could be in either direction. But when you're talking about coaching and you're talking about your competitiveness, do you catch yourself ever like, oh God, I'm just going after the win. I need to go back to my real focus, which is doing this with this kid. I mean,
I would lie if I didn't say that I get a little heated in chair sometimes and I'm standing up and there's a bunch of other coaches and there's a bunch of officials that, that definitely know that. And they know that I'm here to be passionate, but at the end of the day, right. It's what's the reality there, and it's kind of bringing ourselves back something that, luckily, I've had the opportunity to refine at, dare I say, one of the best leadership institutes in the world. And I, from a young age, was leading people, in life or death situations. So that was a good opportunity, and it's really just set me up for where I am now.
Yeah, and I've also recognized that the kids have much more fun. If you don't have an element of that as a coach, it's not fun to wrestle for you.
No, I mean, at the end of the day, we want to get better, but they like it when coach gets a little jacked up.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, and I'll give you guys I'm not going to give you all my secrets, but one of the things I tell my kids to do before every match, we have a nice somber conversation. I tell them to spill some blood. Mm-hmm. And for the first half of the season, they thought that I wanted them to hurt somebody. And I'm like, well, hold on guys. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is I want you to spill your blood. I want you to make a sacrifice here. Because if you go out there and make a sacrifice, then no matter what the outcome is, you're going to get better. You go out there and give it your all for 6 minutes and you come away and you lost, no one's going to be mad at you. But what else could you do? And maybe it's on the coaches to be better, or maybe it's on conditioning, or maybe, we figure that out. But there's been very few matches I've walked away with and been like, man, you know, we gave that one away, or it's truly the kid's fault. It, I mean, we're talking about 0.001%, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I have to interject because we kind of glossed over when you said that, mm-hmm. you know, one of the best leadership institutions in the world. Are you referring to the Army? I can't
remember. Hey, roll goats, baby. Go Navy, beat Army all day. I have two young boys, and if you say go Navy to them, they will reply, beat Army. And they have since the day they were born.
Tell us about the quick story you talked to, the example you gave us about when you guys beat Notre Dame.
Yeah, so we were talking, for those that are unaware, listening, and the United States Naval Academy is a four-year institution. It's a college. We do have a football team, a Division I football team that plays, you know, games all year. But one of the things that is instilled in us is what's called blue and gold, which is our alma mater. A lot of colleges have it. We sing it, you know, going in your freshman year, you sing it like every night. You sing it after every event. You sing it after every, you know, attendance. I mean, you do it a lot. And I was explaining that there was a game. So two of the 4 years I was at the Naval Academy, we beat Notre Dame, and not like, like kind of Notre Dame, but like the real Notre Dame. And we beat them. And so you're standing in, like, you know, the Meadowlands where the Giants play. Oh, yeah. As all the Notre Dame fans file out. And we're singing this, you know, the song, like the Navy Blue and Gold. And when we get done, we beat our chest and we just yell, beat Army. So it doesn't matter if you just beat the number, you know, 10 ranked team in the country. You don't care about anything except for beating Army. And, there's actually a bunch of stuff from a big saying, right, in the Army-Navy game, which is the only college football game in the country that matters, in case
right.
you're wondering.
Right.
You know, the whole thing is we sing second, right? And so the way that the game works is the winner, the victor, gets to sing second. So Army will sing their alma mater, and then Navy will ultimately sing their second.
And is that a pregame ceremony? Is that what you said?
It's postgame.
Postgame.
So after the game.
So we sing second.
Yeah, we sing second. So, like, whoever wins gets to sing second.
I don't have any military experience, but that just hurts hearing that.
It does. It does hurt. And, you know, if you've never been a part or never watched an Army-Navy game, it's definitely a great thing to watch because there's a group of kids that are never going to play football another day in their life.
Yeah.
But they're giving it all out there. It's like watching like a Friday Night Lights high school game. It's great.
But where is the Naval Academy?
Yep. It's located in Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. And when you said the Meadowlands, is that where home games are played?
Or? No, we have a stadium in Annapolis. It's a small college football stadium, but when we play big time teams, we'll go and we'll have like neutral sites. When we played Notre Dame, played them. 1 year we were where the Giants played.
Yep.
Like the New York Giants play. 1 year we actually, I did not go on this trip, but we went to Ireland. Oh. That was my senior year when Notre Dame went undefeated and went to the national championship. We didn't beat them that year.
Right.
But we beat them the year before. Yeah. So they'll travel. They'll have the team travel, but
they need that for the capacity then, I guess, for those games.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What caused you, you know, you're a graduate in 2013. What caused you to make that selection of college?
Yeah, you know, both of my grandfathers were in the Navy, men that I looked up to in a lot of ways. And but ultimately, you know, I didn't really know it completely then. But I've always had, you know, this really strong faith that my parents have instilled in me. And I've always had this innate desire to serve. And this is going to sound a little dramatic, but since I was a kid, I thought that I was going to, like, give my life in service. Like, I was a kid that was like, I knew I wanted to be in the military, you know, wanted to be a Navy SEAL at one point, wanted to be a pilot at one point. You know, you go through all these things. But since I was six, it was the United States Naval Academy.
Hmm.
I can honestly say that I only applied to one college and got in, and the acceptance rate at the Naval Academy is incredibly low. Hmm. I was not smart. That was not a smart thing to do.
As it turned out, maybe it was incredibly smart.
It worked out, but you know, and while getting in there, and it was the toughest thing, but the best thing that I could have ever done. I mean, some of the guys that I was with are, you know, they're the best human beings in the world.
You know, I know we're on a topic, and either one of us could be asking you 50 questions right now, but this one, as I was kind of preparing for today, and then listening to you for a few minutes before we started, it triggered something that I've thought about for many years in my life. And you just have kind of latched on to this word of service and servant. And I think about that, you know, and you have this interesting life that encompasses service in the military and service in the church. And service in the community. And again, I confess my lack of military background, but, you know, you think of combat and you think of war and I'm very intrigued and attracted to the military idea. Do you ever see a conflict or a juxtaposition with service, or are they the same types of service, or how do you define service when it comes to the military?
Yeah, it's easy for everyone to romanticize going to war and you know, the World War II, watching Band of Brothers, being that guy. But what's really tough is to be the guy who's sitting at a pier and you've been there for 30 days, or you've been out on deployment for 10 months and trying to make sure, you know, your young sailor doesn't kill himself, right? And the only way you do that is by dying to yourself, and by, you know, the ultimate service of letting some part of you go so that they can get better. You know, there's a book, great book called Leaders Eat Last. But just that concept, and it's something I've instilled in my kids. My oldest just turned 8 yesterday, but is this idea of leaders eat last. And you think about it from like an army standpoint, or like in a chow line, you know, maybe there's not enough food. Okay. Well, who gets it first? Who needs the food? It's the boys, right? Your men. Your people, they need to eat. You can go without it. And if you honestly and truly embody that, then you can, being a servant leader can happen anywhere. And I've it's connected to my faith because of the, you know, the servant leadership that I've seen in Jesus Christ, and in that way, that's how I try to embody it. And that's what really drives everything I do. But it's dying to self and ultimately saying, look, you're more important than me. And that's hard. You got to do it every day. You got to wake up every morning and kind of push your own self aside. And sometimes I don't do it very well. Sometimes I do it better than others. So,
well, no, I think you, you satisfied me, you know, with that conflict I've had, because, I appreciate anyone who devotes themselves to, the truths of their faith, and then I can understand and appreciate the service involved in the military. But it's not just sacrifice, physical sacrifice of your life. It's like you described. It's a constant everyday training of sacrifice, right? Yeah. Like and service. It's beyond just holding a rifle. And going to war, and that is probably more the exception than the rule.
Yeah, we all, right, there's, no one wants to build, everyone wants to receive, right? So, because when you build, it doesn't, you don't get that instant gratification, right? Like, no one wants to put in the work, but here's the thing, like, it needs to be done. So there's kids that I'm working with now, that I talk to now, that, I don't know, they may never, maybe they never remember me, or maybe they remember me 30 years from now. I don't care. right? I got to treat them the same, no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, you once said, I read a quote, the Naval Academy does a really good job of helping you grow up. The experiences you deal with are life and death. To be young with big responsibilities on your shoulders, it prepares you for the gravity of what you will deal with on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I feel like another one of those gray areas that there's no perfect way to figure it out. But when it comes to raising a kid this day and age, you know, whether it's a kid, your own kid, or kids in the that you're with in the ministry, or kids you're coaching, you know, it seems like it's always different. Sometimes you gotta, you know, sometimes we make it easy to provide the answers for the kids or the solutions because they have such maybe big responsibilities. Sports are treated a little bit different these days. I mean, all of a sudden you're seventh, eighth, ninth grade, you're training, you know, 3-4 times a week and have a couple of games where you're traveling across the country or something like that.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you're like, I want to yell at this kid to take out the trash, but I also need him to get rest a little bit. But you got to like wrestle, quotes, with this mentality. How do you approach that mindset? You know, because you have to. Like, I have an old school mindset, but I adapt to many of the modern day. It's a blend.
You know, we did a demographic study. We actually had this. We had Missouri Baptist University come in, and they talked about a demographic study about the current. The current generation talking about. And there's some surprising things, like lowest recorded teenage pregnancies, lowest recorded drug and alcohol use. And you're like, wait a second, teenagers, this is what they're supposed to be doing, right? But it's like highest levels of anxiety, highest levels of attempted suicide, highest levels. But like the most accepting generation when it comes to other people's beliefs and not being swayed by them, but saying like, look, you don't believe what I believe, but we can have a conversation about it.
It's probably the root of all, like, every disagreement.
Yeah.
It starts with that.
Yeah. And when it comes to teenagers, what I've learned is that you have to be genuine. And I use this example, and I was telling someone about when they have kids, and I don't know why this really sticks with me, but I have two boys, an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old. And when my 8-year-old was old enough to start brushing his teeth, I realized something. I'm brushing my teeth like in the bathroom with him. But at that point, I'm not brushing my teeth for me. I'm brushing my teeth so that he sees that dad brushes his teeth. Right. And I don't get anything benefit.
This is
from,
hilarious.
Right.
But it's every night.
And it's crazy though, but because if I just tell him, hey, you need to brush your teeth, He'll listen to me for a little bit, but he's not going to see. Oh. And so when you're talking with teenagers, you know, you're talking with kids who dealing with drug and alcohol abuse, dealing with parents that drop them off or don't care, or maybe they have a great life and they just live here in the city and kind of walk to school or whatever's going on. But, you know, they know if you're authentic or not. Like they can see.
You can be as hard as you want on them if they know you're authentic.
Yeah. If I'm real and I'm looking at them like, look, I'm gonna hold you to the same standard I hold everyone else to, and that's the standard I hold myself to. But then at the same time, you gotta humble yourself because there's sometimes when you're wrong, and they know it, and you can't just walk away and go, oh, whatever. No, you gotta stand up and go, hey guys, I messed up.
Yep.
That one's on me. And I mean that. That's what builds that trust. And it's about trust, and it takes time. People think that, oh, I can go and talk to a teenager and they'll be all, you know, they'll listen to what I have to say. Like, you got to prove your legitimacy, you know? I mean,
can we every once in a while, can we use the do as I say, not as I do line now?
Okay, probably.
Okay,
probably.
Cool. Just like, but, make sure.
You know, I was talking to some kid, one of the kids in youth group, and it's kind of an interesting thing, right? So, like, the internet, right? Like, originally, like, you would go on the internet and you would find, like, you know, when it first came out, you're like, okay, this is where I find facts, right? Then there's generations where it's like, well, maybe not all of it's true. And now a kid goes, I don't care what you show me, do you know what deepfake videos are? Do you know what this is? You know, like, they don't trust anything.
Yeah.
As well, they probably shouldn't.
No, right.
And so,
if you know anything about it daily.
And so, if you got to prove to them, right? And you got to prove in the way you act and the way you walk and the way you do things. And when they start to see that, then they're going to go. And once they're bought in, they're there.
Yeah, their lives are governed by filters.
Yeah.
And, you know, in their
both
pictures.
Literal and physical.
So forget the filters, right? Yeah. Walk this way. You know, and you use the phrase, and I think we're kind of connecting a little bit of this with, you know, I'll just even say, you know, even brushing your teeth, but you talk about, you know, dying to self. And that isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's not really a negative. It doesn't have to be negative. And in other words, sacrifice doesn't equate to unhappiness, right? In fact, it can be accompanied by some peace. And, you know, when you kind of walking in the way that you know you should, or sometimes knowing you should is actually knowing what makes you the happiest.
Yeah. I mean, a seed has to die for a plant to grow.
Right.
Right. So like there's part of you that has to die for something else to grow. And I can guarantee you that what's good in your life, right, and what is there and what's present, right, and the things that will stand the test of time are the things that are that are able to, right, those are what's true and what's right. And those other things will start to fall off, right? Those bad habits, when you start letting those things die to yourself, just like the brushing your teeth, right? We all know it.
Yep.
Sometimes we forget.
That's right.
Sometimes we're
too tired.
But when that little kid's sitting right there, that you're not too tired.
That's right.
Because you don't want them to go through what you're going through.
No, every time's the right time.
Yeah.
You know, are there any, and as I look back, I made a list of all the things only the things that I can know you're involved in from the internet. But
yeah.
But when I made that list, it made me, you know, think about how distracted, I'm going to use that term loosely, distracted you must be because you have to be on in a variety of different capacities. So we could ask 17 questions about that topic right there, but what are there any universal concepts, truths, unnegotiables that you wake up to in the morning to say, okay, if I'm going to go be an engineer and a coach and a youth leader today, this is what I have to commit to.
Yeah. So it's actually kind of interesting because it's none of those things that you can see on that page. My relationship with God, if that's not in alignment, then I can't bear fruit anywhere else. And I need to know, I need to spend my time in prayer and talking with him and understanding if what I'm doing is what he wants me to do. Understand that will. And when that happens, everything, you know, pulls to light. I mean, there's talks of me leaving my current job and doing full-time ministry. And that's a conversation that, you know, is a big thing, right? Like, if you guys don't know, the pay is not very good in full-time ministry, but it's what I'm striving for. It's what I'm here for. And that's what satisfies that. So it's gotta be that at the heart. And for me, right, it's that love and showing love constantly and perpetually. And even that doesn't mean you tell people everything they want to hear. I had a very bad conversation with a parent yesterday. But, you know, it doesn't mean that I don't love him or his kids. It's also, you know, the complete opposite. But it's that truth. And when you do it from the right way and you do it from your heart and you honestly believe it, then I think it's that those are the things that stay around. And then I've noticed that when there's too much going on, it's probably because I'm focusing on one thing, not in that idea of love. I got to kind of cut that out. And, you know, my wife's there to kind of smack me in the face and get me back on track.
They're valuable that way.
They are. They very much are.
Yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, it's relevant in so many aspects. You know, when you think about, if I was going to relate it back to sports, it's just when you work out, you can't just work out. You have to work out consistently. And when you work out consistently, you mentally gain confidence. You know, you could tell a kid to go out and play with confidence, but if a kid goes out and makes a promise to himself to do something and then follows through with that promise, instant confidence. Yeah. Instant confidence.
Absolutely.
And it's not because the dad said it or mom said it, but if you can just create your own promise and follow through with that promise, it's, and then same thing with all of those mentalities. Like if you've spent time, you know, reflecting and really figuring out if you're in line with what your values are, and then you act upon it consistently, then you can sleep at night and you feel like you're in the right place and you get those same rewards of confidence.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and like, you know, it's hard to do, for all of us, but it's consistent. It's when it's in every aspect of our lives. It's the same principles. And we know what they are, but they're just difficult. And like Pete said, it doesn't mean that those have to be, you know, like terrible experiences to get validation. Just have to be, it's easy to make decisions if you know what the core values are. You just fall in line.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
same thing with the companies that you work for.
I forget who said it right, but right. A man who stands for nothing will fall for anything. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, you know, you got to have something you stand for. And if that, and ultimately, right, how powerful that thing is what will guide you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't mean you're not sympathetic or empathetic. You're standing for something that is not compromising those characteristics.
Absolutely.
I wrote down 5 terms, and I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, man.
To consider maybe not the order, but which of these means the most to you if someone were to label you, okay? Evangelist, leader, role model, servant, mentor.
I would say servant, then evangelist, then there was mentor, and what was it?
Role model and leader.
Role model, mentor, and then leader would be last.
Spoken like a true leader.
Is that a test or a pass?
You know, I think that I had that nearly correct. And as you said it, I thought leader might be one higher, but now I understand it, and I'm mostly impressed with your ability to remember the 5 terms. And oh, and then...
hey, thanks for paying for my education, guys. I really appreciate it.
Anytime.
But the, you know, it's... I get it. I mean, I'm learning. I'm not... To say I get it is too high of praise for myself, but I understand more about the value of the term servant. As we're talking, and it, you can be a servant in all of these capacities that we've been talking about, all of your roles, all of your titles, so to speak. What's it mean? Speaking of which, we haven't touched on this one too much, even though you alluded to, what's it mean to be a deacon here?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So we're a Baptist church. So the way our church works is we have our head pastor, and then what some churches call like a board of elders or like an executive board. We have a deacon board, and it's a collection of ministry leaders around the church. And say there's, you know, we have a, you know, a monthly meeting, the pastor will come to us and talk to us about, you know, things that are happening in the church, how we can help, if there's more ministry opportunities, I was recently elected as the chair of the deacons, so I'm pretty sure I'm the youngest. Maybe there may be another guy who's like a year younger than me, but we're trying our best. You know, the goal, well, the mission of this church is to manifest the love of Christ by serving our neighbors.
I've heard of this word before.
I think I'm in the right spot, but that's what it is. I don't need to get anything.
Yep.
I just need you to get something. And that's what started all this wrestling stuff. That's what started all of this is I saw kids that were in need of a place to practice. And so I realized, hey, I can go out and buy a mat. And now they're not practicing in basements. Now we've got, from that one mat I bought, we've had one bought for us, which was a $15,000 mat. We've had one given to us. We run free monthly camps that are put on by NCAA All-Americans, college head coaches, like Big Ten All-Americans. Like these are like high-ranking people that are like, they're doing this for free for the kids in the city. Like, and there's nothing, they don't want anything out of it. Right. Like completely free. We say donations are accepted, but like they half the time just give that back to us, you know, cause it's about making people better. And that's, you know, mentioned about what it means to be a deacon, but deacon's a servant.
Yeah.
That's actually, well,
it's gotta be, it's got to be motivating and comforting and inspiring to know you're not alone, right? Like you're seeing it in this community. You're seeing the activity, people embracing the need and acting.
Yeah.
Take action is a common theme that comes up regardless of seemingly the topic we're on and in these podcasts. And like Chris always likes to tell people if they're trying to understand where we are physically oriented at this moment, since everyone knows where the Pinnacle Home Loans headquarters is on the hill, we say we are just like about 2 miles away down at Kings Highway and Magnolia. And I bring that up because, you know, and you live in the Shaw neighborhood, so, you know, and I know you love the city. I mean, you kind of you confessed that earlier. And so what, first of all, two questions. One, what excites you about the current state of the city, since, you know, we're city guys and we're looking for growth and improvement and just highlighting its attributes. What excites you about the current state of the city of St. Louis right now?
Yeah, you know, what is it? Prospect Yards, like where what is it, the Foundry is?
Mm-hmm.
Like I read some article about the alderwoman who was there and how much, you know, the projects that have been built, the, you know, you want to get excited about St. Louis, look up, you know, there's so much being built, so yeah. much happening, so much, you know, all of these things. And what's really unique and what I love about this, our city, is it's keeping some of the, well, it's not keeping some of it, it's keeping all of like the heart, right? Like a perfect example is like, you know, they're talking about this whole idea to utilize the high rises downtown for apartments. Like, great. You know, we have some of the most historic and oldest, like, you know, skyscrapers in the country. Are you kidding me?
Yep.
Let's use them.
Those are assets.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And like, absolutely. Like, who cares if it was once the Laclede gas, you know, company, like someone's going to love that.
Yeah.
Someone can love, you know, living in a historic neighborhood is great until you got to replace your windows. That was a horrible experience. but you know, it's this idea of trying to find that beauty in what we have going. And I think that's what St. Louis does a really good job of. And what we're finding our identity. We were a city that was, you know, rooted in this union labor, you know, manufacturing big, and realize that's not who we are in the future. So let's figure it out, right? Let's change who we are. Let's grow. And I mean, I think the sky's the limit here in the city. You're looking for an investment, buy something downtown. come be a part of it. Because if you haven't been to the city lately, come to Tower Grove Park on a Saturday.
Active,
like,
right?
Yeah. You want to see people walking the streets, and but the job's not done.
Yeah,
we need more people. We need more people to come fill these buildings so that, like I said, right? If you want to, you know, if you want to change culture, you got to be a part of it first.
And you probably see that with, you know, it's probably somewhat exciting too to see it with affiliated with two schools in the city. You got the youth, you know, they're going to have a sense of pride, hopefully. Yeah. And, yeah. You can contribute to that. And I love now that we alluded to, talking to a couple people in schools in the city, excited about the prospect of the future. And that's great for us to hear, for sure. Second question then, you kind of addressed it to an extent, but so I'm going to narrow it a little bit. What do you want to see with the youth that you're dealing with in terms of their contribution or their love for the city?
You know, what I want them to do is I want their heart to break for what others are struggling with. I want them to look at someone and to see a need, a pain, and I want them to ultimately reach out and try to fix it. And that goes from my wrestlers to the youth group kids to, because that's how you serve.
Wouldn't that affect the community if people thought like that?
Yeah, you want to know the crazy thing is that they're out there.
Yep.
We just need to point these. We need to fire these arrows off in the right direction, right? And there's people out here trying to build these kids up, and I think that it's not a lost cause. I mean the job's only started, and I'm excited to keep doing it.
Yeah, it's not a lost cause at all, and it's a very worthy cause and rewarding as well. I mean, because that's the next generation that we have coming up. So I think there is people willing to do it out there, but bringing it to their attention and utilizing the power of asking goes a long way. And some people don't even discover how much they love it until they start investing in a kid, because you can feel it. When you look into a kid and you said after you do gain that trust, you can feel it, and you just kind of know. Yeah, I mean, the Mike England podcast. I mean, he was one of my mentors. This is 30 years later.
Yeah.
25 years later. 25 years later, and you don't even sometimes see it until 10 years later.
I mean, well, our city, you look at SLU, right? You want to take a gamble on Richard Chaffetz. He says he's going to pay you back tenfold.
That's a good place to put your money.
But here's the thing, right? I'm sure that superintendent or whoever it was, that wasn't the first time he did that.
Right.
Right?
Right.
There was other kids. And it just so happened this one kid decided to come back and to give it all back.
Wow.
And that's all you need, right?
You see it a lot.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, Coach Bobby, I now know after this episode why I was directed to reach out to you. It's clear as a bell and so, so grateful. And I'm actually... not only for your time, but I'm actually just glad to have met you. I know our paths will cross again, and I will insist upon it.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, guys.